You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, groundwater is a vital resource to people around the globe, but in many places it's endangered by contamination or overuse. We'll talk to the authors of a new book that takes a look at the threats facing groundwater. Right now, scientists are hacking into the human body to help people with debilitating conditions. They're using bioengineering to do things that were once thought impossible, things like designing bionic limbs, regrowing parts of fingers with stem cells, and helping a blind person see with her ears. Ideas that sound like science fiction or the plot of a Hollywood thriller are now becoming reality in research labs around the country. Adam Puri joins us now. His new book is The Bodybuilders, Inside the Science of the Engineered Human. Adam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob.
I want to meet one of the central characters in your book, somebody who is taking advantage of this technology himself and helping pass it on to others. Hugh Hare, am I saying that right, at MIT. Tell us his story.
Yeah, it's a really incredible story, and it's actually one of the ways that I got into this book. He was a champion rock climber. At 16 or 17, he was one of the best athletes on the East Coast. And he had very little interest in school, though. He was like a C and D student. But then, he was hiking Mount Washington, him and a friend, and they wandered into the wilderness and got lost, and they almost died. And his legs were amputated below the knee, both legs, and he became a double amputee. And the doctors told him he'd never walk again, never run, never climb, but he started tinkering with his prosthetics so that he could bring them on the climbing wall, making them into 7-foot-long prosthetics and, you know, little blades that he could climb. And he became even a better climber than he was before. And, then when he got on the ground, it was very uncomfortable walking. So he started taking engineering classes, and now he's a leading bioengineer. He became a straight-A student. And basically, he's figured out a way to reverse engineer the human leg. That's one of the things that is driving this revolution is we now have the processing power to analyze things like that. You know, there's about 200 bones, 700 muscles in the leg, and he's figured out how they relate to each other. It's, you know, the leg is basically a complex web of tendons and muscles that juggles energy and recycles it, and he's replicated that with a bionic limb. So it's a pretty inspirational story, and it's helping a lot of people.
And when I think of prosthetics, I often think of an inert shape of matter. And this is incredibly high tech. There is hardware, and there's really complicated software that enables him to walk. I think you wrote that if you didn't know, you wouldn't have known.
Right. I mean, well, every once in a while, there was a little squeaking noise, as the gears went by. But yeah, he's walking, and he actually, I mean, one of the things that was amazing is just he was telling me when he first lost his legs, he used to wake up, he'd be dreaming of running through the cornfield behind his house with the wind in his hair, and then he'd wake up, and he thought he'd never run again. And now he jogs Walden Pond every day on prosthetic limbs. It's pretty incredible. And, what we're seeing with that, we don't have the signal processing power yet to, for instance, totally replicate the billions of neurons, what they're doing. But this is sort of a preview of what we'll be able to do as computing power, sensing, and all these things advance in other areas of the body.
And Hugh is kind of an example of both sides of the story you're telling. On the one hand, people who have what we would consider a disability or a condition that would limit their lives, doing their best to not accept that limit. And on the other hand, the scientists and researchers who are trying to work around what we thought were the limits of our human engineering and technology.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many moving stories that I came across while working on this book. People who hadn't seen and could suddenly see again. And with Hugh Hurt, a lot of people, when they come in with their family members and they try on these limbs, and it really feels to them like they're walking again. And, people cry. It can be a very emotional experience. These types of things weren't possible just a few years ago.
Yeah, tell us the story. You mentioned seeing again. Tell us the story of the woman who could see through her ears.
Yeah, she's another amazing one. That's my mother's favorite story in the book, actually. She was she wanted to be a vet, and she was working in a grenade factory, actually making grenades to save up money. And she loved nature. And then there was this industrial accident and an explosion, and she lost both her eyes, and she was blinded, this woman named Pat Fletcher. And Then one day, you know, years later, she was surfing around the internet, and she came across this program that claimed it could convert pictures into sounds. And she didn't think it would work. She thought it was funny, but when she tried it, it kind of blew her mind. And what it does is, it takes the pixels of a picture and it converts them into sounds. Our brain is actually capable of processing, you know, scores of different sounds at the same time, and it does so in a consistent pattern, and over time, her brain learned to recognize these patterns, and it actually routes the patterns of what she calls soundscapes to her visual cortex. She's been, they've scanned her brain at Harvard Medical School, and actually, if they jingle keys next to her ear, they can see that that sound is routed to her auditory cortex. But with the soundscapes, it actually goes to the visual cortex. So in a sense, she's seeing. And, you know, when she was telling me a story about standing in the middle of the desert, looking out with the guy who invented the thing. They were looking out into the horizon, and she said, "What are those things out there?" And he said, "Mountains." And she started to cry because she, you know, she loved mountains. And then she actually regained depth perception. So that's an example of what they call neuroplasticity, which is, you know, the ability of the brain to change. A lot of times, you know, for decades, scientists thought you needed, you know, to create a new set of eyeballs or a new ear that's exactly replicates the way that we get the sensory stimuli into the brain. But it turns out if you can just get it into the brain somehow, they call these devices sensory substitution, the brain can learn to recognize these patterns because it's a very sophisticated pattern recognition machine.
And that's another takeaway, I think, from your book, that people are starting to think in innovative ways. Instead of how do we build a new eye, it's how do we create this visual information in a different way. And for Hugh, it wasn't how do I create a leg, it's how do I create something, no matter what it's shaped like or functions like, that meets or exceeds what I would have done with a leg.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing that was amazing about Hugh Herr and that I kept coming across with the book is that, and, you know, I set out, in a certain sense, I was interested in just human augmentation. I'd been hearing about all these crazy science fiction things, and I just wanted to know, you know, is that really possible? You know, what is really possible? So I'm a reporter, so I went out and started trying to find out what people were doing, how it was affecting people's lives. But the things that were the most amazing were the things that actually unleashed untapped resilience. And for Hugh Herr, he was sort of doing these augmentation things, like making these really big long legs and tiny little blades that could fit into crevices and things like that. But when he started to study the solutions, the ones that he found that worked best were in nature. You know, they've been honed over millennia through evolution. So, like, you know, he's, you know, when I talk about him, it's a way to just get into what we've learned about how the human body works. You know, our legs are these very sophisticated springs, and the ankle is actually kind of a motor. So that's one of the reasons that amputees have back problems and stuff, because it doesn't, you know, those inert prosthetics don't really replicate reality. But he's able to just sort of figure out how the tendons and the muscles juggle energy and then release it. I think we recycle something like 60% of the energy with every stride. So that's pretty interesting. And that's, you know, it's a sublime solution that nature's come up with.
Talking to Adam Peori about his new book. It's called The Bodybuilders: Inside the Science of the Engineered Human. And Adam, I think when people think of engineered humans, they might turn to, might think of genetics, first of all. And you talk about that through the example of muscles. Can you tell us what's out there when it comes to the potential for building more muscle, maybe for people who really need it, maybe for people who just want it?
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. Like, you know, a lot of our qualities, like intelligence, are based on multiple genes, right? So we can't, even though there's this revolution in genetic engineering, we still don't totally understand how all the myriad genes work together to do something like intelligence. We don't have the signal processing power yet. But with muscle, there's this one mutation that they found, and it's basically for what they call a negative regulator of muscle. So when this protein is expressed, it makes muscle growth stop. So if you have a mutation that blocks this protein, your muscle keeps growing to a certain extent. And I was writing about, you know, a few years ago there was they've known about this for a while in dogs. You know, there's what they call bully whippets, and there's also these cows that are tremendously double muscled, and because they lack this. And then, you know, sure enough, people had speculated that there must be somebody with that mutation in humans, and a baby was born in Germany that they called Super Baby. And then I talked to somebody from Muskegon, Michigan, and their son, you know, he actually pulled himself up into a what they call an iron cross, like this gymnast move where you form a human T, when he was under a year old, and they thought, wow, that's crazy. You know, so they think he has a mutation that has knocked out this negative regulator called myostatin. And it's a promising cure or it could help people who have muscular dystrophy or other muscle diseases. It could just forestall, you know, their diseases are mutations in other proteins, but they basically destroy their own muscle. So this would help slow that process, and also an age-related wasting. So there was I profiled this guy in that chapter, also named Lee Sweeney, who was at the University of Pennsylvania, and he was inspired by the people he talked to at conferences for you know, families with children who had Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, but also by his grandmother who had, you know, her muscle had, you know, we all have muscle wasting and bone thinning as we get older, and she had eventually become bedridden and sort of lost the will to live. So he was looking at this as a way to cure muscle wasting in the elderly. And he created what they called Schwarzenegger mice and Schwarzenegger dogs. And I think there are some clinical trials for Duchenne's, but at the same time, there's, you know, all these weightlifters, and, you know, as soon as this news came out, he got phone calls from all around the country from people who wanted to become human test subjects, including a coach of a high school football team, strangely enough, his secretary was telling me, and he was just besieged. So now he's on the World Doping Authority panel as well. He's trying to cure muscular dystrophy on one hand using this technique, or at least treat it, and also prevent it from being abused by athletes because, you know, steroids were actually therapeutic at first before they became.
And briefly, Adam, as we wrap up, we've looked at a few different examples. I mean, the frontier is wide open, both for using this bioengineering to help people with serious diseases and other conditions, and maybe for people without those conditions who are looking to soup themselves up in one way or another.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about Pat Fletcher. I mean, one of the people who scanned her brain, he's actually trying to convert that device into what he calls a James Bond. He calls it, I forget, something about James Bond. And instead of turning, you know, visual pixels into sound, he would actually turn infrared pixels into sound, and then maybe you could see through walls. You know, so that's one example.
Wow.
All sorts of cool science fiction stuff, you know. And Ewers used the same biomechanic insights to build exoskeletons that can be used by able-bodied people. So it's really fascinating. I mean, my book is a lot about where our limits are, what we're finding out about what causes them, and how we might overcome them. I just found the most interesting narrative and emotional stories had to do with people regaining lost function.
And we'll leave it there. Adam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's Adam Piori. His new book is called The Bodybuilders, Inside the Science of the Engineered Human. Coming up after the news, we'll talk about threats to groundwater nationwide and around the world. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.